Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back. You are on with the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I am your host, Charlie Smith. You can find me on X/Twitter at Smith_MLB. Joining me tonight, Jeremy Schilling at JTShill20. The Boston Red Sox are able to salvage the series against the Chicago Cubs after losing two ugly ones by winning 6-1 behind six very strong innings by Garrett Kershaw, cracking the 100 pitch number yet again, winning his third straight for the first time this year, his fourth win out of five starts. He hasn't lost since the end of May, but I think we're still trending in the right direction. Jeremy, what was your key takeaway from this one?
My first thought is that this is what we're paying Garrett Kershaw for. We are completely punchless through essentially the entire series until the seventh inning today. But Garrett Kershaw kept you in the game, kept it 1-0. And when the bats finally woke up, we were able to pull this one out. So, I mean, this is this is what all those great Red Sox teams had, whether it was Pedro early on, Curt Schilling, you know, Josh Beckett, to have a guy in your rotation that when your team is just going in the wrong direction to say, that's all right, today we're going to win. And that's exactly what he did, because the first two games, in the sixth inning, I'm like, we're going to score one run this whole series. The opener, we had one. Then we got shut out, and it was looking like we were going to get shut out today until Abreu smoked that ball, the first one to right. So, I mean, he's just awesome to watch. I put him in the same category as Skubal, who's on right now on ESPN, doing the exact same thing to the Rangers that Kershaw did to the Cubs. So he's so much fun to watch. He's the type of pitcher where you go get your snack, bathroom break when we're hitting, because you don't want to see him just utterly dominate a team back like when Pedro was striking everybody out. So he is what he's been. And, my last comment before I kick it back to you is, where would this team be without him? He's 11-4. He has the most innings in the American League. Our bullpen was taxed up until 10 days ago. You know, where would we be without Garrett Kershaw? He's essentially keeping this thing together by a thread.
Yeah, I mean, Garrett Kershaw could very well have 16 wins this year. If you look at it, he has five no-decision results where he allowed one run or less, which is just disappointing. That means you just didn't score any runs. And outside of that game against Washington, his last non-quality start was May 21st against the Mets. He went 5 1/3, allowed one run on five hits, struck out five, walked one. The guy is... honestly, I think he's better than Skubal. I would rather put my stones in that basket. I think the guy can pitch angry, and when he's pitching angry, I mean, there are batters that go into that into the box, and they also hit angry. And Kershaw just has one of those hold my beer moments, and he's going to get the best of 95% of hitters. One out of 20 may get lucky, but he's just going to blow by 99, 100 miles an hour with a you-know-what fastball. Facts are facts. You don't pitch the way you do like this by accident. And the Boston Red Sox had two rough games coming out of the All-Star break. We were super pumped. We won 10 in a row. And as you mentioned on one of the last shows that we got to do together, worst time to have an All-Star break. You just won 10 in a row. We faced two whatever teams, no offense, and then one decent squad, and we swept them in a four-game set. So now you're going to face some tougher opponents. And this was the game that you, again, you have to win. You have to win on Crochet Day. But there was a lot of other stuff that happened in this game that was very like weird one-offs. We're running a lot more. There was caught stealing situations that happened. There was some interference or obstruction calls. One got called for, you know, in our favor, and then the other one went against Chicago. So it went in our favor again. Pete Crow Armstrong, I've been saying he's the next 50-50 guy. He's going to hit 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases. I love watching him play, except against the Boston Red Sox, because it's really hard to cheer for him when he's on another team and he's playing against the Red Sox. The guy's just super dynamic. I mean, I was annoyed when he got that double and started slamming the ground. I'm like, come on, Pete, like, what are you doing? But if that was against any other team other than the Red Sox, I'd been like, yo, let's go. Let's go, Pete. Come on. And the two plays that I want to talk about, Duran is obstructed by Dansby Swanson, is unable to get to third base, and then they award him third. And then Pete Crow Armstrong caught stealing on his way to third. And they end up not calling obstruction because he was out by 8 feet. And Crochet was standing in front of third base. Merlone called it, as you and I were talking about. And he was out by 8 feet. So he stood in front of the back, got the ball, tagged him out. He was done. And I think PCA was still upset. He was still chirping. And I think that's why he was a little angry in this game. But the Red Sox need to win this game. You've scored one run in the first two games. And to your point, you thought, you know what? We might only score one run in this series. And I think that would set a very interesting tone for this team. I wasn't a huge fan of seeing Rafaela bat that high in the lineup. I like where he bats in that 8-9 slot because it's like having an extra leadoff guy. But the Red Sox came to play today, and it really happened on three swings. So while we won this game, we did do it on three swings, one of which was a pinch hit at bat. Alex Bregman somehow finagled his way into that lineup off the bench and hit a three-run jack to left field. And I don't know if I'd say his was a no-doubter, but Abreu's definitely were. And he just has a really pretty swing. Abreu's swing is really, really nice. And both of those, as soon as he hit them, I knew they were gone. And it was really nice to see that in the seventh inning. You're down 1-0 in the entire game. And I'm praying, please, for Crochet, please get this guy two runs. Willy Abreu, hold my beer moment, hits a two-run homer. Then you have a three-run homer. Then Abreu again. I believe that was the order. Abreu, it's kind of, Bregman split the Abreu home runs, but that was it, you know? So there was no, you know, runners in second and third and able to knock the runner in. We had opportunities with runners in scoring position. We just didn't get the job done. And so that's something that this team's going to have to continue to work on against better opponents. This team needs to be able to get this done after the All-Star break. And if you can't do it against teams like Chicago and the Dodgers and Philadelphia, who we're going to be facing soon, you're going to have a really hard time if you're expecting yourself to be a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, that's what made this series so disappointing up until the seventh inning is they were outclassed. They were, it didn't, you know, it was like one team does not look like the other team type of thing. This team is best with getting on base, causing havoc, and the Cubs are a good team. So they're not going to make, you know, mistakes that we've kind of used against other teams. You know, I thought today the defense handled, the Tigers came out. I think they said, like, if we're going to get to 3-4 runs against Crochet, we got to steal some bases. We got to do some things to kind of put pressure, and we withstood it today and supported Crochet with some defense. You know, and that is what gives me the most hope. Because a month ago, we would be throwing balls into center field, misplaying balls, you know, just not hitting the cutoff man, the routine stuff that may look innocuous in the moment. But when things start to go the wrong way, miss cutoff man, you know, then there's a pass ball, the run scores. It's just they're starting to do some of those things better. So I'm cautiously optimistic looking forward. I'm not going to get over how annoyed I am at how punchless, listless, however you want to put it, they went into this series. It's like, and I don't know if it's a reflection on Alex Cora, probably is, but the Cubs looked ready to play. They were ready to go. I know they were home, so it might have been easier for them, but this is professional baseball. You gotta be ready to go. You know, the Cubs just look like a better team, and I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. We still have a way to improve. I'm going to continue to remind myself that, you know, four ninths of our lineup are rookies, you know, but I'm disappointed that they didn't come ready to go.
Yeah. I mean, you think about the first inning, that's been a real problem for the Boston Red Sox starters. And one of the graphics that they showed before the third game today was the fact that the Boston Red Sox lead AL teams this year in first inning runs allowed, 70. So you think about the first game. Lucas Giolito walks the first two batters and then gives up the three-run jack. And the batter right after that gets a double in left field because Bregman and Duran kind of can't find it in the sun. And that's our first inning. Game two, very first pitch. Solo shot to left field. Very next batter, solo shot. And now you're down 2-0 in the first inning. And you're not facing a nobody. Shody Managa's pitching in the second game, and Colin Rhea is pitching the first one, and he's actually done really well as of late. So that's one issue that the Red Sox really need to button up, because if you can't lock that first inning down, or you've already kind of looked like you've thrown in the towel, that's a problem. So ducks on the pond. Runners left on base with runners in scoring position. MLB teams this season. The Boston Red Sox are fifth, and they're third in the American League East. The Yankees and Blue Jays, surprisingly enough, have actually done worse. And then how long can you go was another graphic that they shared. The Boston Red Sox have an ERA of 2.61, which is the best ERA. So if you just, I mean, you obviously can't do this, just delete the first inning, they'd be that much better. But they've got to figure out a way to dominate against the 1-2-3 guys. You can't be allowing these guys to absolutely just slap you around in the first inning. As the wild card race went before this game today, the Boston Red Sox held the third spot only a half game ahead of the Rays, 2.5 ahead of the Rangers. So you have to win this game. You've got to keep going in the right direction. And here's the thing. The reason why these games are really important to win, you've got Philly for three games in Philly, and then you're facing LA at home, and LA has been really struggling. I mean, really bad. They're 2-9 in their last 11 before today, and then they lost again. So 2-10 in their last 12. You have to jump on these teams. And even if you do, I know there are going to be the naysayers out there that say, oh, well, they just got lucky. Yeah, luck's part of the game, kids, because you know what? Seidon Rafaela made an amazing attempt at a play when he was playing second base, nicked off his glove, and it ricocheted and went into a different direction. You can't blame him for trying to make a great play like that. There are some morons on here, not on this podcast, but like former people that used to work with us that are saying, oh, this is a deplorable team. And I can't, you're an insufferable fan. Go like play hopscotch or coloring books or do something else. Don't watch the team if all you're going to do is be negative. You got to be positive about something. On crochet day, you can't find something to be positive about? Go do anything else. I don't want you cheering for the same team that I cheer for. You're a garbage fan. And this team, we have done better this year, even though we've had the same record for the past couple years at this point in time. I am more excited about this team than I have been in a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, look, from my perspective, my position on this 9-game stretch is just survive it. 4-5, 5-4. Yeah. These games matter for the young guys who really should feel some additional pressure because the other teams are good, and it's not going to simulate postseason baseball, but that's one of the reasons why I find so much value in finding a way in this year. Give these guys those postseason at-bats. You know, this 9-game stretch is kind of an extension of that, because when we're ready to hopefully go and actually compete for a title, they'll have some of those first-time jitters, postseason, buildings packed, national TV, it's freezing cold. Like those things are going to matter for years future. But for this year, this series represents this stretch of nine games represents playoff teams, first place teams. And, you know, Meyer swung the bat. Okay. He hit the ball at a couple people. You know, I'm not seeing that the moment's too big. So there's plenty of positive to pull from that. And if you survive it, you know, as of today, we hold a playoff spot. You know, I mean, as of today, we get to play postseason baseball. So hold on to that spot, you know, stay in the mix, and maybe they have another heater on them. I don't know, it'll be 10 games, but like nice little six games run. But the thing that I'm concerned about, you know, is where they start to make the same mistakes that they were making earlier in the year that indicates that they're going to potentially lose a few in a row. Today was reassuring that I think they're less likely to do it than they were a month ago. And so, you know, we'll see. One of the bigger question marks that I have for this team right now, and we've talked about it a lot with some of the downtimes and no games, is Buehler's spot in the rotation. This is a big spot for him tomorrow, and I know we'll talk about it at the end. But as we're looking ahead, Buehler against that lineup, that could be a good test. And maybe what we could expect to see from him, is he going to give us a chance to win tomorrow? So a couple other just points about today's game. A lot of pressure on Rafaela hitting him third. I don't mind a jump in the lineup. I don't know why you move him all the way up to third. And I know today was a pretty wonky lineup, but I do see the value in having that level speed on the nine hole, but if he's hitting for power, you want to give him as many chances to drive and runs. I just think it should be from the sixth hole. That's a miscellaneous note. You know, so I'm getting, you know, one of the things that happened in yesterday's game, which we didn't record last night, so we didn't have a chance to talk about it, but he came up with a man on first and second and two outs and listlessly just flied to center field. Making him 0 for 29 with runners in scoring position this season. That's really hard to do. To not have a swinging bunt single flare into right field, he's got to be weighed down by his failure with runners in scoring position this year. That's really tough to do, 0 for 29. So, I mean, I think that's another thing that we need to address, as we've discussed in recent recordings, is I think that's going to be a spot that's going to be addressed here in the next 10 days as we get towards the deadline. So those are my miscellaneous. Oh, I did have one more miscellaneous thing. This bullpen, when it's asked to pitch, you know, they're not running somebody out there with a bases loaded jam in the fourth. When we're seventh, eighth, and ninth like we were today, they're getting people out. You know, they're winning games. We didn't have to use Chapman, so he should be ready to go for this Philly series if we can have a late inning lead. But I think it was Whitlock, Ocala in the ninth, and I can't remember who pitched in the eighth, but they each had one strikeout, no walks, no hits, and, you know, had a smooth end of the game. Let the offense wake up.
Yeah, so to your point, so you had it was Garrett Whitlock first, then Hicks came out. Hicks was throwing 9,900 mile an hour sinkers. And then it was Alcala who closed it out, because they were talking about how you can't see it, but Obi was in there, and it sounded like when he was just in the bullpen, just throwing, it sounded like the ball was going 1,000 miles an hour because of the echo in there. It sounded nice. Like when that ball comes into that glove at 100 miles an hour, it sounds really nice. I want to talk about a couple other points, and I get why some people might be negative, not like stupid negative, like some people that we've known and worked with in the past, but you had 5 days off. There's going to be a little bit of rust, right? Giolito, for example, he walked the first two, couple questionable calls, just really unlucky. He didn't walk another batter. And then after that, he only surrendered another run. Bayo also kind of calmed down. Giolito don't give you a quality start, which is a problem. We had starters that weren't able to give us quality. It was like 4+, maybe 5+, sometimes 3. We just couldn't get it done. And then Bayo, same thing. He kind of settled down after the home runs. It wasn't the greatest performance by any stretch of the imagination, but he was able to get you into the sixth inning. He didn't finish it, but he got you there. Now, to your point about the bullpen, you got Hicks in that trade. I don't want to see Hicks as a starter. I think if he can stay healthy and be good, I think he could be an elite arm in there. You got three flamethrowers in your bullpen. You got Hicks who can throw 100 plus. You got Alcala who I think tops out at 100. And then Chapman has already hit 102 and 103 this year. I think he's thrown some of the fastest pitches this year. I know that the Brewers have that youngster who's Mizuruski, who's thrown like 103, 104, something like that. He's thrown some pretty fast ones as well. But I really like where our guys are going, right? You got two from the right side and one from the left, and they can throw 100 plus miles an hour. No, they're not going to be expected to throw 20 to 30 pitches every night. But if you can rest one of those guys for a three-game set and have them go two or three games in the next series, you've got two or three possible innings of those 27 figured out. Why is that important? Because if you have the 2-3-4 guys or the 1-2-3 guys, you're probably going to want one of those guys that can throw 100 miles an hour to just power through and blow by fastballs past that lineup. I'm really not concerned. I know that Philly's going to be probably the most difficult team to face out of these three that we're facing. Between Chicago, we lost 2 out of 3. We powered through in game three. You have the Dodgers who are really struggling after that. But I think Philly is the strongest team of the three right now. Not the best, but the strongest at the present moment. I don't know if you want to talk about the Philly series right now, but Rafaela being moved up from 9 to 3, it is for no other reason other than to just get him one possible additional at-bat. Because if you're in the 9 hole, you're obviously going to have a less likely probability of getting an extra at-bat than someone who's batting 3rd or 1st or 2nd in the lineup. It didn't work out in this game. It was very, very wonky. I hope they revert back to him going to the 9 hole. Maybe the 6 hole, Jeremy, like you mentioned. I just don't know if the 3 hole's there. And the problem is we don't necessarily have a 3 hole guy because ours just got shipped out, which is another reason why I struggle really, like really badly with the idea of Jaron Duran possibly getting moved. They keep chirping and using his name out there. And that's got to play on him too a little bit. He's got to be feeling, I think, added pressure. But I think the front office has got to know, after shipping out their biggest name, shipping out Jaron Duran, even though you've got 2-3 years of you know, control, you would have to be blown away by the package. I don't want to ship Duran and another player to get a pitcher. I don't think that should be where the Sox are going, unless you're getting another one back or an elite number two. That's my 2 cents on it. I don't want to lose Duran because there's a chance that one of them could go down. And if you do lose, say, for example, Abreu and Duran's gone, now you've got added pressure on the rookies that have days of experience, months of experience. And it's you know, this is a game where you will lose people and you need to be able to backfill them. You can't backfill those people if you send them on their way packing. So that's something to consider. And I think and hope that the Red Sox are mindful of that. One other small note, I was really happy to see the home run against Drew Pomeranz because I really couldn't stand Pomeranz after, you know, his one good year in Boston. It did kind of feel nice. It was pretty sweet because I don't think he had given up a run all year. And if he had, maybe it was one. But yeah, I thought that was kind of cool. Anything else you want to add for that?
My big Pomeranz takeaway is every time I see him pitch, I can't believe he's still in the league. It feels like
he was gone
like 15 years ago. Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, I mean, he's still pitching. He's getting guys out. Yeah, I mean, one of the things, and I'm going to read Randy Clements' MJM Strategies comment here. He says, I prefer Rafaela hitting at the bottom of the order because it gives us a better chance of turning the lineup over. I would agree with you, Randy, if he was a Punch and Judy guy, you know, but he's not. He's a guy that's capable of hitting the ball for power. He's got the speed to turn a double into a triple. He can hit, he's hit some big time home runs. He's an RBI guy in my mind. So I understand the point of turning the lineup over. And, you know, obviously if you can get it over faster, you can add at bats, you're going to increase the likelihood to score. But don't you want someone that can drive in the you know, Anthony, Bregman, Narvaez, who should have a higher chance of being on base? So that's my mindset there is, if you have an RBI guy, that's what Rafael is. He's got 50 plus RBIs from the 9 spot. You're just going to give him more opportunity to drive in runs. That's why I see him as a 6 guy. You know, he still has a high chase rate. He's going to strike out. He's going to put a lot of balls into play with soft contact that he frankly shouldn't be swinging at. And so for me, the middle of this lineup is Bregman, Anthony, you know, those type of guys should be hitting in the middle of the lineup. And obviously Bregman gets the day off. So, yeah. And Randy also says Pomerantz ERA entering the game was 0.69. So,
yeah, correct. You don't get two earned runs.
The other thing that I noticed from this series, and it concerns me greatly, is Bregman is not healthy. You see him run and he seemingly has like a max gear, a max speed of like third gear. Like he's doing it intentionally. And I'm sure this is in conjunction with the trainers. Cora understands. And I think that's the right play. But if his quad is still bothering him where he's essentially limited to like a 65%, you know, effort, because obviously that's not him. He's not dogging it. That's not the type of player he is. I think they're doing it intentionally, saying, look, this is kind of max speed. We don't want you stretching your gait out too long and putting pressure on your quad. That means that he's playing through it and he's not all the way healthy. And if we lose him, that's a problem. So I hope he continues to manage that. I hope they continue to give him days off. Because obviously if we're still in it, we need him in August and September, but that's something to note. And if you're watching the game tomorrow and he gets on base, watch how he runs. He's holding back a little bit. So,
yeah. You could tell. I mean, the swing is still there. The bat's still there, but to your point, you can tell he's not quite giving it 100%. And I think you're right. Bregman doesn't sound like the type of guy that would dog it. He's trying to fight for a new contract. Like he really wants
He wants to win. That's not the player. I mean, I think he knows that the best way to preserve the way he can help this team is to play defense and hit. And, you know, hopefully he'll be healthier towards the end of the year.
Right.
So and the reason for the commentary for the anecdote here is I'm now worried back about the quad. What if he does hit a ball in the gap and he forgets and he goes to turn it on and you have a problem? And I'm not thinking like that, just generally speaking. It's just more, like I said, like an anecdote.
I think he's definitely feeling it. I think he's not, you know, he's not 18 thinking he's, he knows he's injured. And yeah. I think we all know that too. He's not impervious to it. He knows.
Total professional, I mean, by the way, because he's contributing with the home run today. And recall, he missed 40 games and didn't go get any at-bats in a rehab stint.
Right.
And when that happens, usually guys struggle. Trout's one of the guys that can get away with it. Obviously, Bregman is here. He's not like scorching hot, but he's also not an automatic out. And of course, he hits the home run today. So, you know, total professional. Really enjoy having him here. I just want him to stay healthy.
Absolutely. Let's slide into this Philadelphia series. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it. I have. A little nerve-wracking, I'm not going to lie. I was really hoping we could possibly steal 2 out of 3 against the Cubs because it's going to be tough. First game of this series, you got Walker Buehler against Zach Wheeler. And Wheeler has been on fire as of late. Lots. I don't know if you've been... Yeah, I mean, pretty much. Zach Wheeler is absolutely on it. Before his clunker against San Diego, he went 6 straight appearances, allowing 1 earned run or less. And he went 3-1 in those games. His ERA is down to 2.36. He's got 154 punch outs. That's second in the National League with a 0.86 whip. So unless Boston finds, I don't know, a miracle here, I don't think that we're going to be able to get past this guy. And he's just, Zach Wheeler is like timeless. He gets older and better. It's like Justin Verlander, except not probably taking some substance here. I love Zach Wheeler. I wish the Red Sox got him too, but it's going to be really hard. And then, yeah, go ahead.
There's two ways to beat a guy like Wheeler. And I would say the same thing about Crochet, Scooble, like that class of starting pitcher. There's two ways. One, you work the count, foul off tough pitches, put the ball in play, put pressure on, and get him out of the game in 5 or 6 innings. In other words, drive his pitch count up. All right, that's one way. And this team can do it. Guys like Abreu, obviously Anthony, Bregman, those guys are professional hitters. They can fight. Even if they're maybe not making their hay in the early innings, they can build that pitch count up. The other thing is you sit around and hope for a mistake in a 3-run home run. So that's that. You're not going to chip away on a guy like Wheeler with multiple innings where you're going to score.
I'm with you. And that's going to bring us to the second game here. You've got Richard Fitz against Is it Christopher Sanchez? Yeah, Christopher Sanchez. And I don't know if you've looked at his line. He's had five straight games where he has allowed one earned run. He has gone an average of seven innings in those games. He's 3-0 in his last five. He has a 2.5 ERA with 122 punchouts and a whip just over 1.1. I think this is another L.
Yeah, I don't love it. I don't love it.
It's really hard. It's really, really hard. And it's only because like you would need to jump on this guy quickly, but he's throwing, you know, anywhere between 86 and 90 pitches, and he's throwing seven innings. So if he goes up to 100 pitches, he's probably going eight innings here. And if he needs to do that, I think he will. He could probably throw 90 to 95 pitches over seven innings and do the same thing, allow 1 to 2 runs. And because Philly's got that high octane offense, they're probably going to get 4 or 5 runs a game. Kyle Schwarber is one of the most interesting players, and I think just a classy dude. Like, no one's ever said anything bad about Kyle Schwarber. I was so happy to see him hit 3 home runs in that All-Star game for the swing-off. I don't know if you watched that or not. He's just a special dude. He's a special player. 1/3 of his career hits are home runs, which I think is hilarious.
He already has a grand slam in the series they played this weekend. I mean, that's not even to, you know, there's the guys up and down that lineup that can hit the ball out of the stadium at any time. Right. We haven't mentioned Bryce Harper.
No,
I know he's aging, and but JT Realmuto is their catcher.
Right.
I've always liked him. And he's had some good offensive years, but I mean, and he'll play a factor in this game if we're going to try to run. That Philly, I've picked them to be in the NLCS or win the whole thing for multiple years now, and I think they're going to be in the hunt this year again.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough series. I know there's going to be a lot of negativity. I mean, here we are, we're saying 0-2 to start the series, but I mean, this is one of the best teams in baseball. Philly is, they're always going to find a way to get to the final four in the National League. And honestly, I mean, this could be the team that faces off against the Dodgers or somebody else in the NLCS. The third game of this series, you got Lucas Giolito against Zeus Luzardo. And this was a guy I'm pretty sure that the Red Sox could have had if they were willing to trade Justin Turner to Miami at the time. And they said no. And so now he's in Philly, and he's also up there. He's got 8-5 record, 129 punchouts. I think this is the only game that the Red Sox have a real shot at winning. He's a good pitcher, but he's also gotten knocked around a little bit. He got knocked around by the Angels, who are not the best team in baseball. And I think this is going to be the chance that the Red Sox have in order to salvage the series and win one game.
I'll say this, starting with Buehler tomorrow, they got to get 3 outs in the first inning. They got to do it. They can't do what they did in the 2 losses to the Cubs, what they've done to the Angels multiple times, and give up a crooked number in the first. They got to get through the first inning and give this lineup a chance to hit. They got to do it. Can't be playing down against teams that are technically better than us.
What's your goal for Walker Buehler?
That's a problem because it's not going to result in a win. Give you 5 innings, keep it to 2 or 3 runs, and give it to the bullpen. The Phillies have had some trouble with the bullpen. Give it to the bullpen and have the lineup have a chance to win it late. But it's got to be 3-2, 2-1. If it's 5-1, I mean, you're not going to dig out of that hole most nights. So, if Buehler can get to 5 and we're within shouting distance where we can maybe go beat up on that bullpen, then that's how we're going to win these games, I think, if we're going to win, which I don't think
I agree. The first two games of this series, you know, like you and I, we both love the Boston Red Sox, but this is just going to be 2 really, really hard games. If we split the first 2 and we win game 3, oh my God, dude. Start making your like wish list for who we should be buying, because if we can split one of those first 2 games, you got to put some extra emphasis on adding before this is over.
They have to buy. I don't think this is the recording for it, but they have to buy.
100%.
Because even if you lose, even if you come out of this thing at 3-6, you're still within shouting distance. You're maybe 1 or 2 games out of the third wild card. You're not out of it just because you hit a rough patch here. This team needs to buy. You can't, and I'm gonna we said it before. You can't call up all the young guys and then not go all in. You can't. Yeah. You can't do it. It makes no sense. You got to get these guys to meaningful September and October baseball games if you expect this team to be World Series contenders in the next 2 or 3 years. This is a foundation year. Go win now. I don't care what happens in the next 6 days. The trade deadline is the middle of next week. The following week, you're buying. So we talked a lot about that over the All-Star break, so I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I honestly, like you said, I want to echo that point. The Red Sox need to get out of the first inning and not allowing any runs. I don't think I've ever been so confident and so like strong and serious about it. If you can't get out of the first inning, I mean, I want Walker Buehler to get out of the second inning having thrown less than 28 pitches. I don't even care if he gets zero strikeouts. Just pound the strikes out, pound the strike zone, get outs. I don't need to see you, you know, throw crazy pitches and you know, not upper 90s, because we know that's probably not in the cards here. I want to see you get out of the first couple innings having not allowed more than one or two hits and no more, I hope, than a run. Because if we do that, we're at least giving them a chance, because the bottom three of the lineup, not as scary. You know, I'm hoping that Buehler can get you 4 or 5 solid minimum innings there, allowing no more than 2 to 3 runs. If we can do that, I'm hoping the Sox can run into a home run and get a couple runs there and then maybe some magic, because Buehler can't afford to have a clunker here. We need to have him get better in the second half. No more of this first half stuff. It was, I'm still a defender of Buehler. I want him to turn the, you know, turn this ship around, but it's got to start with this series. It has to.
Well, he's pitching for a spot on the team as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, that's the part, that's the spot in the rotation that could potentially be replaced. You're absolutely right. Anything else you want to add?
Go Sox.
I love it. Go Sox. That's going to do it for the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I hope you all had a great time listening. Have a great one. Take care.
Warning. The following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here, and you can shop it right from your couch. It's Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Snag outdoor furniture and decor at up to 60% off. Get area rugs for every room at up to 80% off. And refresh your sleep space with up to 60% off bedroom furniture. Plus, score amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals. And get it all with fast and free shipping on everything. Yep, even the big stuff. Right to your door. These are Wayfair's lowest prices of the summer. And did we mention they only last 5 days? So don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off Wayfair's biggest sale of the season before it fizzles out. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday in July sale now through July 28th, only at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.